think of, you know, higher level reasons, more like value-based reasons why you want to change or work on something, you're more likely, we're more likely to do that because that taps in, like we talked about, that higher level thinking of our brain. It puts us in the positive emotional state, and it gets our prefrontal cortex, you know, the front part of our brain that has our higher level executive level thinking, it gets that turned on. So that if you turn that on, you're more likely to be successful and change.
Hello, my name is Wing, and welcome to A Work in Purpose. Do you see people who are living their purpose and wondering, how did they get there? Are you wondering, what is your purpose too? Me too. That is why I'm inviting you to join me on this journey. A Work in Purpose is our podcast for igniting and reaching our purpose together. Each week, I'll be sharing an episode of me interviewing people from all walks of life who are working towards some kind of purpose, whether it is with their career, volunteering, creativity, spiritual practices, or just how they approach everyday life. We'll dive deep into their stories to uncover what obstacles they had to overcome to reach their purpose today. By hearing their stories, I hope you will learn from their journey and be inspired so you too can become a work in purpose. On this episode, we will tackle how to find and reach your purpose based on the latest neuroscience findings with our guest, Dr. Mary Renzo, who is a neuroimmunologist and an assistant professor of medicine at the Cleveland Clinic Learning College of Medicine, and Ali Hively, who is a life coach. Together, they'll share the framework for optimizing our brain for resiliency called CLE, which stands for Connection, Lifestyle, and Emotional Processing. We'll dive deep into practical actions we can take using their framework to overcome things that are holding us back, like stress, anxiety, and fear, and what we can do instead to further develop our higher brain functions and optimize our growth mindset so we can be our highest self and lead a life full of purpose. And we'll also share their stories of what happened in their life that led them to discover their aha moments about their purpose today. All right, welcome to A Work in Purpose podcast. I'm very excited to talk to you too. So we have Dr. Mary Renzo and Ali Hively. And so Dr. Mary Renzo, you are a neuroimmunologist. Can you give us a little breakdown of what the gist of that field is?
Yeah. So neurology is the study of the nervous system. So it's brain and spinal cord and then the nerves that kind of come out of there and helps us think and move and a lot of other things and walk and talk. And then immunology is, you know, obviously we've heard a lot about that with COVID. And so we know our immune system helps us fight things off and kind of police things, what's going on in the body. So neuroimmunology is the study of the diseases that affect both of those things. And what we're learning is there's more and more things on that list. So it used to just be diseases like multiple sclerosis or something called neuromyelitis optica or neurosarcoid, but now it's, you know, depression and dementia. And so a lot of things involve the immune system that we didn't really know and the nervous system. So that's where that comes from. Yeah.
Great. And Ali, you are a life coach and you partner with Dr. Mary Renzo. Can you talk more about what you do together?
Absolutely. Yes. So I help people create change through building habits in their lives. And so together, we have formed a partnership to help people understand what's happening in their brain in regards to productivity and resiliency and really having that ability to bounce back over through stressful times. And so we take Mary's research and understanding of what matters most as far as the studies go, as far as the actual brain goes and all of those things, and then help you apply the action tips into your life. So we're taking it from that knowledge piece, and then what can I do with this information and how can we help you make it happen in your life?
Very fascinating. So Mary, can you share more about your research?
Sure. Just more. So, I think it's neat. You know, so if you're at work, then you definitely have a working brain, right? So if you're working, we all have a brain. We don't tend to think a lot about it. I see a lot of my patients start thinking about it as they get older. Like, you know, if they're hitting retirement stage or something, they say, well, what can I do so I don't get that darn like dementia or something, you know? But there's, you know, when we're working people, all the way and students, you know, our brain is the thing that's going to helping us be there and helping us be efficient or not. Right. So there's things that you can do to kind of tune it up or sharpen it up and to support it. So it's an organ One thing to know about it is the brain is has, you know, billions of neurons, you know, like 90 billion neurons, these little strings of electricity flying around and sending messages. And metabolically, it's really active. So some people say, I don't really eat all day. I don't really drink water. I don't know why work is hard, you know, or I don't, you know, so there's certain things to link as your work productivity is like, what are you doing? What do you, number one, know? Like, I just want people to wonder a little bit about the brain, just a touch of brain wonder in regards to work and work efficiencies. Because there's things we can do each day to support it. So Allie and I put together a framework, we call it Cleveland. So CLE, we're from Cleveland, Ohio. So that it's easy. We see CLE all over here, here in Cleveland, Ohio. So we put that together so you know, so people know where to be active and where to put their energy, because everybody these days with COVID is tired, they're working hard, you know, they only want to do what they really have to do because life is pretty tiring. So we made it, you know, we narrowed it down to these three things. So it's connection, you know, how we connect to other humans safely these days, and make that a priority and have a network, active, growing network so that we have, that gives us like power and support throughout our days. And then L is for lifestyle, and Allie can help us, you know, walk through like how to get that into our lives easily when we're busy and we're trying to get our work and our family and our neighborhood activities done, et cetera. And then E is emotional processing. And so the more that we talk about emotions, just name them, and they have less power if we have some skills on what to do with them, how to name them, and so that they don't kind of take over our day, we take over our day. So there's some things we can do each day to, in all of those spheres, the C, the L, the E, to make, you know, to lead to a good work day.
Got it. So before we dive more into that, can you talk more about the concept of neuroplasticity for those who don't know?
Yeah. So neuroplasticity is kind of a neat concept. So, you know, when we're, you know, if the best example maybe is a very obvious example is maybe like a kid learning to walk, like a, you know, little baby, young toddler learning to walk, you know, you see them one day, they're kind of trying, falling, you know, and you see them like a week later, they're doing more. And so, you know, something's changing in their body, right? Because they're actually learning physically how to do more and more. Or somebody who maybe is learning a new sport, you know, I'm kind of good at ping pong, not really that good, but if I keep practicing, I'll get better and better, you know? So that kind of thing, the reason we get better at something is because our nerves are connecting more efficiently. So if you think of them like a branch of a tree, they will connect more efficiently. They'll have more branches, like more leaves to touch each other so that they can send the impulse more. And so the more we do things, that's something called long-term potentiation. The brain actually changes. So even when we learn something new, the brain physically changes, which is pretty neat. So I always say it's not a brick. It is like, you know, it's a living, you know, organ. It's up there, and there's things we can do for it to support it so that it you know, is efficiently working for us during the day. Mm. Yeah, so it's a great quality of the brain, that neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're naturally wired to have a growth mindset, right? Essentially, based on that.
Well, we're naturally wired to protect ourselves, you know, so, you know, we can kind of shift from, you know, fear, stress, et cetera, one moment, and the other moment we think, okay, yeah, I can learn something new. I can take it in. And there's things that we can do. And that's why we talk about emotional processing. We can put ourselves in an emotional state that is more ready for change rather than the fear state. So we have a part of our brain, you know, that sometimes it's called the lower brain, you know, something called the amygdala, and, you know, there's certain areas of the brain that are always kind of policing the area, like, where is there any danger? What's happening? And protects us. And so that's fine. And we could say, thank you for protecting us, but we know we want to try this new thing that seems scary to us because we've never tried it, or we only have one of the skills that we need to build our skills. So we do that a lot with work, right? So, you know, we think, okay, we have X skills, or we're in this position, we're thinking about going to the next position. We need to build our skills. So the brain has the one level of like protect, and like scan the area. But the next level, the higher level thinking, is what the humans have, the area of the brain that helps us with higher level thinking. And the only way that's really optimized is if emotionally we're in a good place. We're not in a fear, stress place.
Mm. So it sounds like there's like a tug of war, or between the two, fear and growth mindset. Mm-hmm. And So what can be done to kind of help the growth mindset?
Yeah, I mean, that is the nice thing is you can kind of drive that a little bit. You can influence that. And that's why, so we talk about, you know, in the CLE framework and our brain ops framework, in the E, you know, so in the emotional processing, number one is just naming it. So the simplest thing would be just list three emotions three times a day. And just so you get used to just saying, oh, you know, I'm at this time of day, I tend to get angry or short fused or super happy. I wake up, I'm in a good place, you know, or mid lunch, I'm hungry, I'm more short fused. End of day, I'm happy, I get to see my family now or what have you, you know. So you can kind of see how your day goes emotionally. And the other thing you can do is, you know, a walk in nature without a lot of electronics, because you want to override kind of the fear and you just want to take things in. So kind of turn on all the senses, the smells, the sights, the sounds. You said you live in California. So, you know, maybe you're walking by restaurants with certain smells, you know, it distracts your fear brain. So there's ways you can kind of get your brain into the higher level thinking.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And how would you say that relates to finding one's purpose and working towards it? What can they do based on your findings to help people reach their purpose?
What do you think, Al, as a coach? What do you think?
I mean, I think when you are not, exactly like Mary said, when you're not taking care of yourself, when your foundations, when your CLE, your brain is not being supported from a foundational standpoint, like you're not feeling really connected to people, when you're not, your lifestyle habits aren't supporting you as far as like exercise and nutrition, when you're working against all of those things, when you're not able to emotionally process, then you can't even get to that point of thinking like, what is my purpose? Because that is such a higher level thinking skill. And it's such a, it often comes when we are able to feel secure in our situation. And then we can think beyond our current situation. If you are in that place of like exhaustion and you're running on empty, or you're filling your body with, you know, junk food and alcohol or things like that, then you aren't allowing your brain to really get to that place of questioning, like, what am I doing right now? What is my purpose? How am I helping? How am I giving back? How am I having this impact? And so I think that by understanding like what matters most to like the bottom line, then that's what really helps to allow you the mental space. And then also just the ability for your brain to go there, because it's like, oh, we're well fed, we're well rested, we're not full of all these emotions that are kind of blocked up. We can start to think bigger picture. We can start to think about that vision. We can start to think about that purpose. So I think it plays a huge role in your life's purpose, in your work in purpose, you know, and by understanding that if you're really struggling to be able to get yourself in that mindset of even thinking about that, evaluating where you are when it comes to connection and lifestyle habits and emotional processing, and maybe realizing like, I don't feel as connected, or my habits really aren't supporting me to a place. No wonder this is hard for me to kind of think bigger picture. And when you get yourself in that place that you are, then it can come so much more naturally.
So it sounds like for us to get to that stage, we have to handle with self-healing first and foremost, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I think that tug of war, I mean, another way to say it is like survive or thrive, right? So are you just surviving and you're just doing the bare necessity to, you know, wake up, roll out of bed, go to work, no good, healthy nutrition, no friends, you're not calling anyone, you're living isolated. And then you roll home, you know, and that's it. Or you just roll off the couch and get on the computer, you know, each day, like most people are doing. Or are you thriving? You know, so do you give yourself time to renew? So there's been some interesting studies that all it may take is 5 to 15 minutes, like three times a day of doing something that's renewing for you to keep you mostly in a positive state during the day. So that could be like, if you have a pet, pets help, you know, because pets, you kind of, the emotions is kind of contagious as long as they're like nice, loving pets, you know, you know, or like calling a friend or going for a walk with a friend, something renewing, you know, some people will do yoga, you know, long distance, virtual with friends, at something like that, that's a little bit renewing, you know, a little chat, 5 minutes, you know, if you don't have all day, you're working hard, you want to get, you know, you have so many Zoom meetings to get in, you need to take a break and renew a little bit. So that's what some of the studies suggest. It can be pretty, it doesn't have to be extensively long, but you have to be intentional about this stuff, or because otherwise you might just stay in thrive mode and never evaluate, like you said, what is your purpose?
I have a question about stress and anxiety. So in a lot of like spiritual and mindfulness teaching, they say that your stress and anxiety is caused by your mind running out of control, thinking about the future and potential threats, or our attachment to our egoic thoughts as opposed to being in the present. Based on your studies, like what would you say is the cause and what can be done about them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big question, you know. So sometimes people have genetic reasons, they have a higher level of stress or anxiety or depression. So, you know, if somebody needs professional help, you know, for sure go and get professional help if it's really dominant, you know, in their days. Most of their days they're feeling stressed, like they can't, you know, take these renewal moments and, you know, kind of turn that around. But why, you know, I mean, the brain is interesting in that it can, it's powerful in that it remembers things in detail, so that if you take it back to a moment, so maybe you had a scary moment at one time and the brain can relive that, even though there's that threat is not present at all anymore. So sometimes people have what you say triggers or something that reminds them of something or a certain location or time of day. It reminds them of something that happened. And so that's where, you know, we hear a lot about mindfulness, but just being really present. And that's why, you know, they say if you really try to break the negative emotions, you can break that with a certain very intentional actions. Like we talked about, you know, the walking outside and letting more senses in, or wherever you are, trying to think of five senses, you know, right then, or you can bring yourself to your happy place, right? So you can stay in the same chair that you were scared in 1 second ago, but take it, like I really get a lot from nature. So I would take it to a waterfall or take it to the woods or, you know, a lovely trail that I love. And I would think about what I see and what I smell and what I hear. And that is a great distraction, you know? So those are short-term answers to those. And they say, you know, our brain remembers negative more strongly. So we have to overcome with multiple layers of positive. So if you have a negative memory, or you always know you're stressed with this time of the day or this day of the week, or you notice the patterns, you have to kind of pile positive things on top of it, whatever that is for you. So sometimes it's movement, you know, positive movement, it's exercise, stretching, and sometimes it's friends. Mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of you know, some people have their favorite kind of sphere out of the CLE to be active in. Like some people love talking with their friends. They'll do that all day long, but they hate exercising, or, you know, they don't want to talk about lifestyle. It's too complicated, you know, so let's just forget it, you know? So, you know, everybody probably has an opportunity of where they can maybe tune things up just to support the brain at work and efficiency levels, and just kind of add a few more layers of the positive emotions.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Allie, do you have something want to add?
Yeah, when it comes to stress too, is one huge thing to help your brain really understand those stresses is to break down to even three different spheres. So what do I have control over? And really noticing, like, what is it that you have control over? You have control over your thoughts, you have control over those mindfulness breaks or everything in the CLE, you know, as far as like things that you're setting up. You have control over your actions and your behaviors, then noticing that next sphere. So what do you have influence over, but not control? And then what do you have no control over? And recognizing where the things that are really stressing you out are falling. So when they're falling into that sphere, like, you know, the traffic, the weather, COVID, politics, like we really don't have a ton of control aside from our actions and our behaviors and our thoughts on those things. So if those are causing you the stress, then, you know, just recognizing that, like, this is stress that you're kind of taking on that you probably aren't going to solve. Then that key sphere is the influence sphere. So the sphere of control that you don't have complete control over, and it's not out of your control. So that might be like your team at work. It might be your family. It might be kids where you have influence over them and you can spend a lot of energy stressing over those things. But at the end of the day, you don't have complete control over them. So where can you, you know, manage your stress in those places and recognize, like, if this doesn't fall in my immediate control, then I need to start letting go to give my brain the reassurance that, like, this isn't, you know, this isn't something that's going to serve me to spend time and energy stressing over. And obviously, like, if there's, like Mary said, further situations that you need other support, if, like, you can't decipher through, you know, through those, then seeking excess support about stress. But I think when you really make a list and break things down to what can I control, what can I influence, and what is out of my control, then you're able to take a lot of your power back in that way.
Yeah. So letting go of things you can't really control and just accept it and then respond that way, right?
Right. And just react in changing yourself from reacting to things to responding. So exactly, just giving your brain a second to take a deep breath and then respond instead of reacting to whatever the stress is in your life.
Okay. What do you think are some of like the things that we do as a society and culture that has been causing our stress and anxiety level to go up and up and up over the last decade? And what should we do instead? Like what about a culture that's causing it?
Yeah, I think, you know, this the CLE reminds us that the people that we keep around us really also matter for our health and wellness and our functioning at work. So they call that your social network. Like, who do you know? So a lot of people move a lot and they, you know, they have to take time to kind of get to know people around them. You know, it used to be you have multi-generations living together. So you always had, you know, a lot of network around you. You didn't have to work hard at it. But now we intentionally have to kind of list. And this is one thing we do in our framework is, you know, have you write down like who's in your network? Who do you know? Who could you call? Like, do you have that, we call it 4:30 in the morning person? Like, you know, you fall, you turn about and you hit your head and you need stitches. Like, do you have someone you can call? Do you know someone that well? And if you don't, and you go to work, you're like, okay, I heard this weird thing. I have to have a 4:30 in the morning person. Could you be my point person? You know, cause you know, I have a friend who just moved to a new place, you know, in Texas, and look at all the things that happen in Texas. And I said, okay, when you get there, you got to ask someone at work, will you be my point person? You have to have one person that, you know, and she made a point of finding at least a few names in that town before she got there. So it really matters and who we know. And that used to just be a smaller, you know, when you hear about it, a village or town or something, that it was a smaller, tighter network. Because truly, we keep only a, you know, 5 to 10 people really close to us. But yet we see all these people every day on social media, you know. But really, the people that are a tight network, they determine our health. So if they don't, you know, eat well, exercise, they overdrink or what have you, and they don't prioritize work or, you know, values or what have you, your same values as you, then that probably is not doing a lot for your, you know, your health and wellness. So we have to be intentional about it now, just because we're more mobile and we're more global, you know, we tend to move, and which is neat in a lot of ways. It brings a lot to our lives in other ways. But we have to be intentional about, you know, keeping people close. And if somebody moves away, then replace, you know, so we have to always be building our network likely.
From a society perspective, just exactly that, like there's people, exactly what Mary said, there's people around us in our society. I mean, except for the past year where we have to really make those connections. But on social media, there feels like we have connection, but it's not necessarily authentic connection. So from a society standpoint, I think, and really just recognizing what your authentic connections are and what your connections are because you know them, you see them, you know, that type of thing is hugely important. And then just the pressures of society that we are constantly faced with, especially when it comes to social media, and not that all problems are based on that, but they are much more in our face, is just like the comparison and the judgment and the pieces of the society as a whole that are now in our hands all the time. And so just recognizing like when those societal norms are actually negatively impacting our habits or our thoughts or getting in the way of like our lifestyle.
Yeah. So it sounds like we have a lot of loose, superficial connections, but we're lacking a lot of deep, meaningful connections nowadays. And it's causing a lot of stress and anxiety for a lot of people, right?
Exactly. It could be. And you just have to be intentional about it. I mean, some people are really good. That's their wheelhouse, right? So that's their area. They're very comfortable with that. Like I'm talking about that friend moving to a new town. You know, some people would do that and right away, you're like, can we have dinner? You know, like reach out to people. I'm new. Can you show me something? Other people like, oh, no, they hang back. Wait, you know, it could take 6 to 12 to 24 months before you really make a strong connection in a new town. So that's, yeah, you just need to be intentional about it. We hear about work network, you know, we need to have a network at work and people at different levels. And, you know, we need to have a sponsor and a mentor and all those things. But our own personal life, we need a few layers of people as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds like we have an epidemic of loneliness and a lot of people don't know how to don't even recognize it, and then they don't know what to do about it, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the first thing is naming it, right? So just saying like what you said, like that is something people aren't really comfortable with. It's not easy for them. And so if we hope with our framework is just to say like, this is really important for our brain, our work efficiency. So we want you to know that your connections are important because this has been shown in caregivers who have networks, they're better caregivers, and we all are probably caring for somebody or something, you know? So, it's important to know where to put our energy. Yeah. Right. I agree with you. I mean, a lot of people, if there's different stages of change, right? So there's one stage is like, you don't know what you don't know, which is fine. And then you know it. And then, you realize, okay, I think I'm going to do something about this. And you finally realize, okay, this is what I need to do. And then you make a plan. Like, how am I going to get this in my life? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think I would love to learn more about your framework in details and how, so maybe we can pretend that I'm going through your program. Mm-hmm. What's the first stage of the framework for me?
Yeah. So the first thing really that we like to focus on is assessing yourself and just kind of opening up your mind and your eye to just being really honest with yourself and recognizing, okay, if I know this is the framework, the connection, the lifestyle habits, and the emotional process, where do I fall in this on a scale of 1 to 10? How connected do I really feel? Like being really honest with yourself. And maybe that's a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And you can kind of check that box and move on. Just like we'd kind of shared some of those things. Like if you have that person, you have that solid network, then great. Like no need to focus on that. Just keep going, you know? And then going on to lifestyle habits, which is a really loaded space. That is the nutrition piece. Are you eating, vegetables, lean protein, healthy fats? Are you filling up on processed foods or eating more of a whole food diet? What does your nutrition look like? Are you going all day without eating? Are you making sure that you're eating regularly throughout the day to maintain your energy or in a way that works for you? So you're not kind of overeating, undereating, that whole piece. And then also exercise, is that happening in your day? Being really honest and clear, like how many times are you exercising a week? What does it look like as far as drinking and smoking? How frequently are you doing that? And again, maybe this takes a few days to just tune into. So you maybe map it out a couple of days in the lifestyle space. So you're really like thinking, oh, I think I only have a few drinks a couple nights a week. And then you map it out and it ends up being more than that. So being honest with yourself about that. And then sleep as well. Like, how are your sleep habits? Are you sleeping through the night? Are you getting, good amount of sleep? And what does that look like? So those are all in the lifestyle piece, which is why that's a definitely loaded one. And there's oftentimes some room for, opportunities and improvement in that space. And then moving on to the emotional processing, which is actually another really interesting, I think, eye-opening piece for everyone, because as you look over your life and you recognize, how do I handle emotions? Do I squish them down? Do I think like, I'm fine, I can get through this, which is a coping skill that you learned and probably served you at one point, but also recognizing that's not necessarily helpful to your productivity, your focus, to your resiliency. And so what do you do with your emotions when you feel them? How do you handle them? Do you check in with yourself, like Mary said, and name them? Do you journal? Do you meditate? Do you do visualizations? All of those stress management techniques, do you have that in place? And then looking at your life overall in regards to the CLE and saying, okay, am I active in all of these spheres on a regular basis? Because one thing that Dr. Mary's research shows is that you can't, like we said, you can't just be active in one. You can't just be, great on working out and eating healthy, but totally ignore the emotional process piece or feel really lonely and disconnected. So then at the same time, looking over all of the CLE and recognizing like, where is there room for me to put some time and attention and be really clear? And part of our program, we identify the exact like amounts, like how much sleep, how much, are we talking exercise, how much. So we kind of get into more of the nitty gritty and we spend some time just like breaking it down and sharing like what exactly those markers are and then what the research shows behind them to why they are what they are. But I think we definitely think the first step is just that awareness and being honest with yourself about where you are.
Do you find that most people are honest about themselves or not?
I feel like, yeah, once we have the disclaimer, then they are. We feel that it's important to give them that permission. Like, this is a totally a no judgment zone. The more that you're honest with yourself, the more you're going to quickly be able to help yourself. And so I think like that loving permission slip is helpful because, you know, we all want to just be doing well at all the things. But when we just take a step back and realize like, this is not going to serve anyone for me to not be honest with myself. So then people do, then they're just like, you know what, you're right. Like there's no harm in wherever you are is where you are. And we really, part of our life purpose is like being so accepting of people where they are and helping them to just move forward in a way that's intentional, in a way that feels good. And that's something that we really like to focus on. So hopefully our goal is to send that energy to them too, you know, that loving energy.
Yeah, nice. So once people are aware, then they move on to the areas that they need to work on, right? And what are the typical barriers that are stopping people from taking that next step and keeping them in their status quo?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I mean, definitely speaking to a lot of, you know, professionals and just people in general, I mean, time, stress, money are all always the barriers. And those are things that we really see with clients and with people going through the program. They're typical, you know, understanding the obstacles that you're going to face. One thing we really talk about is knowing ahead of time, like, okay, before you even start this little journey about getting more clear on this, like, what are the obstacles you're going to face? Be honest with yourself about those, because you probably already can name them before you even start this journey. You know, if you have children, that's probably going to be something, a busy work schedule, that's going to be something. If you're feeling like, you know, motivation is an obstacle for you, then it's probably going to be an obstacle. Stress, you know, so I think just having that conversation again about the awareness of like, what are the obstacles? I know Mary sees a lot of obstacles. I would say one more is not knowing what to do. So luckily we cover that, but Mary, in your patients, like you can share a lot more of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think people, like we talked about, sometimes people don't know that it's important or that it might help them today. They don't think it's a issue because, you know, their brain is what it is and they're busy with work or, you know, family or community or what have you. So they don't really think that they need to do this now. They think it's for older people, like later in life, I'll think about something about my brain. But yeah, so we can modify it and optimize it now. And so, you know, that's exciting. And when you say, will people be honest? I did just read a cute study. Like there was one study where they used like a humanoid robot to interview people so that it wasn't, they didn't feel any like shame, just, you know, telling what they actually were doing. So that was cute. So the people said, well, I felt it was more easy to talk to because it wasn't a real human. You know, it's kind of funny. Anyway, so, but, you know, I couldn't react and respond as humans could, of course. But yeah, no, I think knowing your obstacles, I think scheduling, Manalia as a coach is really great about reminding folks to schedule yourself in, have your own color on your calendar and put yourself on the calendar. And I've been doing that for a while and that makes a big difference. So I write in the days I'm going to journal or meditate or do yoga or work out or lift weights. And I write it in because then I can kind of assess my week when I can squeeze this stuff in. So you have to be realistic. And it can be pretty dramatic, a small change. You know, there was a great study. I mean, I treat a disease called MS, and there was a great study that folks that even thought about a healthy diet, so they just even learned something about it. They didn't have to be perfect at it in any way. You know, they had a better quality of life and they had less symptoms from their disease, just because they considered a healthy diet, which is pretty neat, you know, so it doesn't take 100% perfection to make gains. I mean, we're all, like Ali said, we're all on a transformational journey. And so, and the brain, we already talked about that it's neuroplastic. So it changes with all these new things that we do. So you don't have to, you know, you don't be perfect at it. Just one new thing maybe. Yeah, but I think prioritizing, know where to put your time and energy is the hugest thing. And just being honest about your potential barriers. And then being thoughtful when you're in a good headspace, being thoughtful about how to overcome the barriers. So if you have kids, maybe there's a certain time of day. I mean, my kids, when they were young, there was a certain time of day that was better. Now they're old. I have a different time of day that's better. So, you know, you have to kind of be flexible depending on you know, what's happening in your life, when you can squeeze this stuff in.
Mm.
And maybe get rid of stuff. Like maybe you'll learn like this stuff has never shown that it helps. So maybe you'll be like, oh, okay, great. You know, I could get rid of that stuff, you know? So, or just honor what you're doing. Like, I'm already doing all this stuff. This is great. It's already really going to serve me for the long run.
Great. Do you find that there are some people who are attached to their like identity and they resist change? And what do you suggest they do to don't be afraid? Just, you will love this new you much more.
Yeah. What do you think, Al?
I would say absolutely. Yes. I mean, we're all comfortable being where we are, even if where we are is not comfortable. So it's just common in human nature to want to kind of stay where you are, and change is uncomfortable. But when I think you are really understanding the benefits of the change and you really can see that like there are some reasons that this matter and they are tied back, which I think is one of the most beneficial things of bringing that research and that like life piece together, because it's like, hey, we all know we quote unquote should do this, but like, what's the real reason? So when you bring in the science and you bring in the studies and you realize like, oh, actually this really does matter, then that is one way to help get behind the identity of change and really becoming that. And then I think the next piece is just like visualization can be hugely powerful in recognizing like, you don't have to be scared to evolve. You are still you, and you were still you before, and you're still always going to be you. And so when you pull in those more positive traits of who you want to become or that next level version, really starting to picture who that person is. What do you look like? What do you, how do you stand? How do you talk? What is your life purpose? What are you doing on a day-to-day basis? What are you doing for your work as far as like your work to make money and your work in the world? And who are you surrounding yourself with? And then when you really start to put these pictures together in your mind, you can see yourself as that person. And then there's so much less of a gap between who you are now and who you're becoming, because you can see who you're becoming and you're not afraid of that. And so you can start to really embrace that new identity, and you can start to really step into that understanding that it's not something to fear. You know, people will come with you. You're still the same person. You're just that better version. And some people maybe won't. And so having that conversation, like that would be okay. If those people that are not going to move forward with me, you know, choose not to, that's not about me, that's about them. And so kind of just starting to picture what that looks like in your life and who that might be can really help to bridge that gap.
Yeah. So as humans, we're way more likely to follow through with something if we link it to a really a high level, like a value, like Allie was talking about, or your life purpose, rather than it's going to get me to Sunday, you know, like short term, like we're only linking something to, I want to lose 5 pounds. You're less likely to get there unless you said, you know, I really want to last long. I want to live healthy. I want to be able to walk down the street without being out of breath. You know, if you think of, you know, higher level reasons, more like value-based reasons why you want to change or work on something, you're more likely, we're more likely to do that because that taps in, like we talked about, that higher level thinking of our brain. It puts us in the positive emotional state, and it gets our prefrontal cortex, you know, the front part of our brain that has our higher level executive level thinking, it gets that turned on. So that if you turn that on, you're more likely to be successful and change. So you don't want to try to link a change to something, you know, trite or small or, you know, something that won't last. You try to link it to one of your values.
Interesting. So you're saying that by having a sense of purpose, it does turn on a part of your brain that's normally off.
Right. Yeah. It's hopefully not off, but it's maybe not optimal, you know, because you know, sometimes we're scared, right? We're scared to do something. So the scare, like you were talking about before, it's that yin and yang, it's that balance, it's survive, thrive, you know, it's all that tug of war that we have. So we can get that higher level thinking, that executive level thinking. Yeah, if we're in the more positive emotional state. And how do we get ourselves there? We imagine what's really important to us. It's so important to me that I don't need help walking down the street. I really want to stay as healthy as I ever can be. Or it's really important to me that I think, you know, I use my brain all the way, and I really think about these, you know, these things at work, and I want to have these great ideas at work. So I want to do everything I can to optimize it. So I need to stay out of the anxiety fear zone. I want to get that higher level brain thinking.
When that higher brain part is like not optimized, does that contribute to this sense of anxiety or?
Yes. Yeah. That is the issue. Yep. It kind of puts you in that zone. that's the tug of war. It's like fear is pulling you back away from the great big ideas, big thinking, you know, the really creative side of us. So when we're really looking for like great ideas at work, we want to put ourselves in the positive emotions best we can.
Mm-hmm. It's like you need the foundations, the CLE, to get yourself there. And then you need to get there to help the foundations kind of kick in. So it kind of goes both ways. You know, it can really be mutually beneficial in that way for connecting to your purpose.
Hmm. Fascinating. So let's imagine that, okay, so I'm someone who is aware of my purpose, but I haven't like taken the big step to reach it yet. What do you recommend that person to do?
Well, I think you know, sometimes you look at yourself, like, hey, look, you got yourself a podcast. Look at that. And now you're meeting new people and you're hearing, you know, other people's purpose and you're learning from that, you know, so, and you're connecting. So you're hitting a lot of boxes, you know, by just taking this step that you started this, as opposed to like thinking like, hey, I think I'm gonna start a podcast, about not doing it, right? So you must have learned how to start a podcast. You learned things along the way, right? Mm-hmm. So your brain is different already because you followed through with your goal. So that's, you have to honor that. Say, look, I already did this and look at me. I'm, you know, think about the good things with the change, you know, and sometimes you just have to see yourself win, like cheer yourself on because, you know, even if they're little, they seem little, but they're not. It's hard, right? It's hard to get humans to change. Humans like to stay the same. We're comfortable. Fear keeps us in a comfort zone. So any little change, cheer yourself on, you know, and that's fine. It's not, that will help you because you'll keep getting wins because you'll just keep cheering yourself on every little win.
Yeah, totally agree. Like personally, since I started thinking about this podcast and taking the steps towards it, all of those doubts about, oh, is there more to life? Why am I feeling so a bit empty inside? Has kind of just gone.
Right?
I don't feel that way anymore. Yeah. It's like, wow, that's amazing.
And, isn't that neat? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a journey. Like,
good job. Good job, Wayne. Good job.
Thank you.
And that's part of it, right? So you're committed to your purpose right now, and then you're going to go to the next step and it's going to change and evolve and like not being locked in and just being like open to that happening. Like this is the next step in the purpose. And then what's the next step, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I see myself as like being on a river now, like I'm just letting myself flow down the river. Whereas before I was kind of maybe resisting or maybe not even be in the river of life.
Yeah.
And now I'm just letting it flow and it's like, great.
Nice. I like the river.
Yeah. So what are some habits that people should develop to build more purposeful life or more resilient brains?
Yeah. I would say the habits are really outlined around the CLE. So those habits of connection and how you're making them happen, the habit of literally having a Zoom chat, if that's where you're at right now with this COVID world, or scheduling a walk, the habits of the exercise, nutrition, the sleep habits, these are all going to help you so much in moving toward more closer to your purpose or figuring out your purpose or helping you to live out your purpose. And then really that emotional processing piece, the habits around how do you handle your emotions? How do you handle when you get upset? How do you handle when you get disappointed or frustrated or, you know, really excited, like really starting to understand that. And when you understand that they can become habits in each of these spaces, then they can happen quickly and you can use so much less time and so much less energy and so much less decision-making and willpower and discipline, because we waste so much of our energy thinking like, should I work out? Oh, should I? And it's like, if your habit is to work out, you put on your shoes and you go, or like you have a really hard day, you're feeling really frustrated, you're feeling disappointed. And if you don't know what to do with those feelings, then they kind of ruminate, they stay with you, you end up frustrated all day, you end up kind of just not living as optimally. And then when you have the habit of emotional processing, you feel the feeling, you name it, you process it, and you move on with your day. And so you're right back in alignment with moving forward toward your purpose. So when it comes to, you know, figuring that out, and when it comes to knowing what it is and making it happen, they both go together. But when you are active in all of these spheres, and then you become more efficient at acting the habits out, then all of a sudden you have like more actual time in your day, you have more space in your mind, and you can really be more clear about what you want to do intentionally instead of kind of what happens to you.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think it's like what you said about the river, you know, so that you had this idea, should you do this? And you probably thought about it for a while, and then you started learning steps and you did it. And now you feel like, wow, I can do that. I can do new things. I'm meeting new people. I feel so much better. And you're going to keep doing new things because you did this. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, is like the more that you try a few things and you see some success, it, again, it turns on, kind of, you know, quiets the fear part, activates the higher level thinking. You'll get more and more ideas. You're just going to keep getting ideas. And, you know, I always think, like, you know, I hate a wasted brain. Like, well, you know, we have this power in the brain to have big ideas and to keep building and keep learning. But some people are stuck because they're afraid, but they don't realize that like one little step sometimes can open a door, and they can show themselves that they can do it. And that's the other thing, is just, who do you keep around you? Are they builders and growers too? Like, are they building or doing something new? And if not, add one or two, you know, just add somebody who's doing something interesting, something new, willing to take a risk and learn something new, a new activity. And then it's like contagious, you know, because emotions literally are contagious. I mean, like us, you know, looking at each other on this Zoom, it's even not even something we're consciously aware of, but we know each other's emotions, and they're contagious to us. So you want to keep people around you who have that positive joy and hope, and they're taking those steps, even though it's scary. It's not that fear is not there. It's just they learned to keep congratulating themselves with every little, you know, new step they take.
Yeah, it's totally true for me what you just said about how when you start something and you are making progress and making small wins, how you kind of naturally want to learn other things. Like, mm-hmm. I thought that by launching this podcast, I'll be so busy, but then the opposite has happened, where I was like really inspired to learn how to teach meditation, for mm-hmm. example, right, and take on more things right? to do and learn, which is,
I love it. Unexpected. Yeah, look at you. Right. I love it. Yep. Mm-hmm.
What are some outdated or widely misunderstood ideas that we as a society still believe in related to your findings that we should let go of and consider instead?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, it's a big industry where people giving misinformation about things that matter. That's why we try to boil it down to things that matter. And the things that matter actually can be really fun, you know, so connecting, you know, meeting new people is nice and fun most of the time, you know, and lifestyle can be fun. You get a good night's sleep, you know, you get good meals, eat good, healthy, whole foods. And like you both had mentioned, you know, if you get yourself in a good place, you have more energy and even more ideas, you know? So, a lot of times it's just kind of closing doors. Sometimes I actually visualize that, just close all these doors that are just too loud and too much information, because it's not real. It's not real science. It's not real data that they're saying is going to help you, and just stick to the things that we know, what science says so far.
Hmm. And what are your thoughts on like psychedelic drugs? Some people are using it to, you know, let go of the fear and to connect mm-hmm. with other people on a deeper level. What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, I like to stick to the CLE. I mean, I think it's very accessible to folks, to stick to what the science shows so far, and what really helps is, like we talked about, you know, having people around us. Loneliness is a risk for us. You know, people die earlier if they're lonely. They don't live quality life if they're lonely. So I would work on the things that really matter and just be active in that, in those areas. Because again, they're fun. Most of them are very enjoyable. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think of, what are your thoughts on pharmaceutical drugs as it relates to?
Well, I mean, I think some people need medications to treat, you know, mood disorders and things. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, then they need to work with a professional for that. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would like to ask more questions about your personal background and get a little bit of understanding of how you got to where you are today. So I just want to ask, where would you say you are on your journey towards your purpose? Have you found it? Are you working towards it? Are you living it?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I mean, I think, you know, my kids think I'm old. So I think like, what are you doing something new when you're, you know, in mid 50s? So I think it's a great time. Like, you know, I have more time to think about what really would matter to me. And I want to think of myself as useful in the community. And so I'm just trying to find and learn new things and meet new people. So just to keep life interesting. So, I think I've taken time to figure out what's important to me and my values. And I go toward that, and I stay with people and keep people around me and keep meeting new people that are active in those areas.
Mm. What would you say your purpose is currently?
what is my purpose? Wow, Wing, that's a big one, right? You know, I think to use what I've been given, the skills I've been given to their maximum value.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you, Allie.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, I'm always working toward my purpose. I feel like probably 5 years ago, I got a lot more clarity on it. I used to be a teacher, a elementary school teacher, and then I had my kids and stayed home with them and realized that my purpose and my passion is absolutely teaching, but it's not just kids. It's helping to teach people, you know, how to feel good in their body and their mind and how to make it happen. So I think that's kind of an evolving purpose that I have. And I feel very aligned to it. I don't think it's something that you ever like really fully know. And, you know, at least that's where I feel I don't fully know where that's going to lead me, of course. But I do feel like I'm living out my purpose each day, which feels great. And I also think just bringing it back to when, you know, when we're constantly searching for that purpose and looking for our purpose, like it's not necessarily something that's going to hit us over the head, but it's like finding that in each day. So whether it's joy or fulfillment or giving back or all of those things, looking for the purpose in each moment and in each day then really leads to feeling like you're aligned to your purpose, even if that doesn't have a goal. We kind of often want to attach it to a goal, so it doesn't have that. So each day, what can I do? Who can I be? How can I show up to be, you know, that best version of myself? That really helps me to feel like I'm living my purpose, even if all my actions are kind of in different spaces, but keeps me connected to that.
Okay. So what would you say would be your overarching purpose for the last 5 years?
I would say helping people on their own path. So helping people to recognize that we're all very different, but similar at the same time, and helping people to understand and embrace who they are so that they can specifically create the lifestyle habits and create the habits that fit them, that allow them to feel good in their mind and body. Because so often, myself included, we try to do things that work for everyone else. But when we understand what matters most, then we can do it so many different ways. We know that sleep matters. We know that nutrition matters. We know that exercise matters. We know that connection matters. How we get it is our own choice. So my purpose is helping people to understand that the way that you make exercise happen in your life or nutrition happen in your life is completely up to you. And so you just need to do it consistently and in a way that feels good. So I'd say my purpose is helping people to make that happen.
Got it. Nice. Now, was there something that happened during your life that led you down this path towards this particular purpose? You know, maybe some obstacles that you got to overcome that led you to this aha moment that, yeah, this is my purpose.
For me, I definitely struggled with perfectionism. I struggled with like body image issues. I struggled with trying to figure out nutrition and different diets. And I was kind of always on a roller coaster with that. So I would say that those are a lot of obstacles, especially internally. I would say, you know, people might think like, oh, you didn't struggle with that. But in my mind, I mean, I did, and that's really real. And so, that's really led me to that piece of like doing what works for you is the best way. And so I think that's hit a huge role in leading me to my purpose, is just kind of learning how to navigate that and learning how to overcome that and learning how to own what works for each person. So yes, definitely.
So how long have you been kind of in that stage where you were like having those obstacles? And then at what point did you realize, I need to make a change? And when did you get that awareness? And then what steps did you take to make that change?
Okay. So, I taught fitness classes and I cooked for people, and I was constantly trying different diets. And I really felt like this was like probably 10 years ago to 5 years ago. And through my 20s, I was definitely in that place of just like trying different diets, trying to feel good in my body and feel good in my mind really also. And so one particular Christmas, it was like 5 years ago, I started to try a new diet, and it was one of those diets where you cut out all of the things, right? Like sugar and food groups and gluten and everything except meat and vegetables. And you drink this drink that was disgusting, and you just, you know, do all these different things that make no sense, to the grand scheme of sustainability and feeling good. So I had decided to do this diet, and I had gotten a few people at a local gym that I work at who were just wanted interest in doing it together, like a little, you know, let's do this together. And so I was just feeling really bloated and feeling really kind of that post-Christmas feeling. And I started doing the diet, and I would go to the gym and I couldn't drink the drinks. I was like gagging. I felt disgusting. And I would go and say, oh yeah, I'm doing it. And I was lying to myself and to them. And I was feeling so bad about it inside. And I was feeling like so much shame around the fact that like, I couldn't stick to the diet. What's wrong with me? Da, 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 da. So a couple of days later, I realized I was pregnant, and that was why I was feeling so bloated. That's why I was feeling so, you know, just not good in my body. And right then and there, I did have a huge aha moment. And I was like, what am I doing? I am so disconnected from myself and from my body. And here I am feeling horrible about myself. And I'm not even aware of what's happening. And so I did right then just decide, like, I am, you know, done with this. I'm figuring out a better way. I am committing to this purpose of not, of getting away from diets, of bringing that power back to myself. And so, yeah, I did have an aha moment. That was probably it.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. So it sounds like having some sort of like major life change causes a lot of people to just sit back and reflect on what they need to do differently, huh?
Absolutely. Yes. I would say that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
And then since you had an aha moment, you went into life coaching and decided to learn about what it takes to be a life coach.
Yeah. So basically, I realized then that I was doing all these different things. I was helping people by personal training, and I was cooking meals for them. And what I needed and what they also needed and what everyone needs is to like really figure out what works for us instead of kind of trying to get everything from outsourcing it, not necessarily all the services, but just like looking outside of ourselves for like, what diet should I do? What should I do? Instead of looking inside of ourselves. And so I really dove into the research on personal development, habit development, just did a ton of different courses, and then realized that like my passion is teaching, my background is teaching. And so it kind of naturally came together to just move into that space of like, okay, I can lead myself through this. I can heal, like lead myself in this growth. And then from there, I can help others in the same way.
Got it. And Mary, like, how did you get into neuroscience? And at what point did you decide to connect with Allie and do what you guys are doing today to change people's lives?
Yeah. So, yeah, it was funny because when I was in high school, I didn't even think I'd go to college. You know, I was like, I don't think I want to go to college. My mom was like, you're going to college. So I knew I liked sciences and things. And so I was going to be a physician's assistant. And then I got to physician's assistant school and I was like, wait, I want to know more about that. And they're like, no, we have to move on. You know, they only could teach things for so long. I think it's, you know, you meet people for a certain reason in life. And my roommate in college was a pre-med student, and I hadn't really even thought of going to med school. I didn't think I'd ever want to be in school that long because I wasn't a big fan of school then. until I started learning about things that I really loved. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I guess I could go to school for like 12 years, you know, about this. So I just think it's really neat. When you look back and like why, you know, certain people were in my life at a certain time, and being willing to kind of listen to the message or something, it was really nice. And I was most interested in neurology because you have to kind of think about like pathways. It's almost like looking at like train tracks and where they lead and where you get on and where do they go off, where do you get off? And I don't know, my brain just works like that. I like to think that way. And so I love neurology, and I heard of something called psychoneuroimmunology. And so that's the mixture of kind of what we're talking about, you know, which is like emotions and nerves and the immune system. And we've heard a lot about that with COVID, you know, how if you keep your stress down, you actually have a healthier immune system. So a lot of studies have shown that. And so, yeah, so I just kind of, I love neurology, and I didn't really have anyone in medicine in my family, but I enjoyed it as I kept learning about it and kind of opening new doors and learning more and more about it. And then I decided to go to med school and do a residency and then a fellowship and, and get into neuroimmunology because I got to meet people at a younger age. So a lot of neurology people with strokes, let's say, or something, and that you tend to meet people in the hospital when they're older. But in neuroimmunology, I meet people younger. So I've known people like, you know, as they're young, and I've been in it now for a few decades. So I know people and now they're grandparents or they're having kids. And so I've met, I know them, you know, kind of through a lot of life cycles. So it's really neat, you know, to have that long-term relationship with a lot of my patients and their families.
Okay. And then, so you were doing a lot of research, and at what point did you decide that I want to make a bigger impact and get this out there? And
yeah, I think, you know, I have four kids. And so as they go off into college and into real life, I still have one in the home, and, you know, I just have more time. And I was looking up a quote while you were talking, and I love this quote by Nelson Mandela. It says, "There's no passion to be found playing small and settling for a life that is less than the one you're capable of living." Mm. So I think it's like what we talked about earlier. I just want to make sure I'm using what I can to make this world, you know, the most optimal that it can be. And I do think there's a lot more to be said about optimizing brains that we don't know. Younger age, you know, I see, you know, obese kids, and I see a lot of teenagers that aren't moving much. And I know that that's not going to serve our community, them personally, or our community as a whole, if people aren't caring, or, you know, just even knowing that it's going to matter in the long run. So I don't feel like it's fair if I know some of the science and people don't know just in day-to-day life that there's things that they could be doing. So that's when Allie and I, we met at a women's business conference. And when I was giving a talk on brain health, and then she was a life coach, and I was like, well, I know the science, but I need to help people, you know, put this into their life. So that's why we partnered up with Brain Ops Group.
Oh, okay. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah. Was there like a door you had to step through to, for you to, as you mentioned, like when your kids were, when you were having a lot more free time and mm-hmm. you're trying to decide what to do next. Did you have some hesitation that kind of held you back, and then you kind of have to work through that to be where you are today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking, like, you know, like you mentioned, you were thinking about the podcast for a while, you know, thinking about it, like, do I have time? Is this the right thing? Why me? Why should I do something else? You know, I'm already a doctor. Why, you know, why should I add something to my plate? But I think, you know, again, like going back to my values, I want to just, you know, equality is important to me, and I just want to make sure people have opportunity to learn about this. And instead of just coming to the, if you happen to have to come to the doctor and we tell you, I just want people to know it when they're still in health and they're trying to, you know, raise families or build a career. And so, yeah, that's why I put time and energy into it.
So you started like giving talks publicly. Mm-hmm. What was the
first? Yeah, just year? Like you said, like meeting people and kind of jumping on the river, like you said, mm-hmm. just like what happens next? You meet people, kind of open a door, and then, you know, you learn more about how to get your message out so that people can learn about this. You know, podcasts are nice these days because people can listen to them when they're driving or running or walking, or cleaning the house or whatever. And so we can share our message on podcasts, which is great. And then, you know, we built a course so people can jump in our course if they really want to, you know, take some time and devotion toward this, you know, or they can just watch us on social media and learn things that way. So we just want to make sure that people have the opportunity to get some brain wonder and learn some things that, you know, could help optimize brain function.
What were like the first field speaking experience like for you? And then like, did it give you butterflies in the beginning, but then after a few wins, you were like, oh my gosh, this.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true because that's when I met Allie, and I wasn't sure because I hadn't spoken at a women's business conference, and I wasn't sure they'd want to hear about brain health or brain optimization or brain resiliency. And like the room was packed and they had tons of questions, and I was like, oh, this is really, I didn't realize that they want to know, you know, they really wanted to clarify what really matters and how to get it done and learn more about resiliency. So yeah, that's why Allie and I our heads together so we could just, you know, help share the message. And then we had that was here in Cleveland, Ohio, and then we had an opportunity to give a talk as well in Scottsdale, Arizona before, you know, kind of the world shut down. Mm-hmm. And that was really fun because that was a room full of doctors, women doctors, and they had tons of questions about it and were very interested. So I thought, geez, you know, if a room full of doctors still have questions about how to help their own brain health or those they love or their patients, you know, there's just still more, you know, information that needs to get out to everybody. So, and we've heard a lot of, you know, with COVID about social determinants of health, that some people have uneven access to information. Mm-hmm. So Allie and I have kind of made it a point to say, you know, we're going to do volunteer things every quarter so that we also share our information, because we don't want it just for people that can, you know, that happen to, you know, hear a podcast or be able to pay for a course or something like that.
So now that you've put yourself out there and working on your purpose, how do you feel on the inside differently than the Mary before that started doing this?
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I agree with what you'd said about the podcast. It feels great. You know, it feels nice to get some wins. I don't, there's not really a path to follow, you know, like it's not that everybody's done this, but there are some people, I try to find people who are a few steps ahead of me and maybe have tried something in their own area so they can share with me. I believe in coaching. I believe in getting coaches and, you know, paying people for, so they can help me learn, you know, how to figure out my values and move forward according to my values. So I feel like that's very important to pay coaches because it's worth it, right? So it's like, I think it goes back to that Mandela quote, you know, you don't want to be anything less than all that we're capable of, right? So that's what bothers me. I don't like waste, I guess. So that's my other value. I like efficiency and I don't like waste. So I would hate that if I didn't know I had the ability to help people that I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Great. I want to ask, I want to hear the first thoughts that come into your mind when I want to ask you, what is the most important lessons you've ever learned in life? What's the first thing that comes to mind?
Go ahead, Al.
Lesson? I would say, I guess like love comes into my mind first, which doesn't seem like a lesson, except it can be applied to like all lessons. And I feel like that is really something that I've tried to embrace when it comes to all lessons and all people and just infusing that into everything. So I think I wouldn't have said that a couple years ago. I probably would have said something about success or something. But I think when it comes to love, it's like, if that is ultimately the goal, if you go into any type of situation, if you are looking for your purpose and you're rooted in like self-love and you are just kind of putting that out there, then the way that you show up is just so much more real and authentic, and it's so much more open and welcoming. And when it comes to learning any lesson, I think if you have that in like the front of your mind, it's just like that positive, loving intention, then everything just feels better. And so I guess it's kind of a vague answer, but also like very applicable to all things. And I would say the other lesson would be intention. Just kind of getting back to like intention in all spaces. So what is my intention for doing everything I do? What is my intention I put into the way that I do things? What is my intention in, you know, the way that I teach, but also feeling other people's intention and recognizing that is a huge lesson. So when it comes to like my kids or even other adults, just kind of sitting back, like, what was their intention? Oh, they were just looking for attention, or, oh, they were just trying to get what they wanted. It wasn't anything about me. It was, you know, so I think looking for the intention and being intentional and then applying love to everything.
That lesson about love, I think is so important because it sounds very simple and basic, but when we don't, we operate off of fear, and there's like a barrier between people when we don't. And I kind of adopted that too recently, and I noticed such a major shift when I talk to people now, you know?
Yeah, you're just so much more relaxed and so much more, I feel like, open, and you can hear people better because you're not worried about what they're thinking or what you're doing or,
Exactly, open. Yeah. What about you, Mary?
I agree. I know the first thing that came to my mind was something my mom used to say, which used to drive me crazy as a kid. So she said, actions speak louder than words. And so it wasn't what we said we would do, but it was actually what we did. And, you know, so I watched that in other people too. They say, oh, it's really important that you know, that this is important to me, but I never see them do anything toward it. Then I just know, like, you know, our behaviors really show what's important to us. So I take that at many levels for myself and for my kids and, you know, just for others, you know, just the authenticity of others. If they say, well, this is really important to me, but you never see them do it, you know? So I think that has helped me just to kind of assess situations, you know, and help me be intentional about what matters to me.
Mm, okay, great.
With action, you know, with action. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is one book that changed your life?
I'll say Gretchen Rubin's Better Than Before. That's about habits. That is one that definitely changed my life. Also, You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero. That's another one that has changed my life. And just like huh, wow, we are more powerful. And those are both pretty easy reads. I could go on and on, but those are the first two that popped to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, just because of how I like to think the framework, it's the 7 habits of successful people. I read that a long time ago, and that it gave me a framework where how I could keep a lot of projects organized, or how I keep what is important to me on my schedule. So that's been pretty, I never forgot that. I don't tend to, you know, remember everything in books I read, but that one has been really like instructive for me, how to keep things that are important to me in my, you know, week, in my life. Yeah.
Great choices. So actually I think now would be a good time to go into the lightning round. So I'm just going to ask you a bunch of short rapid fire questions. You can answer in a word, with the word or a sentence. So here we go. What's one thing you like to do to relax?
Journal.
What kind of journaling do you do?
I do like vision journaling, affirmations. I like to release things in my journal, just like what I want to let go of. Lots of lists.
Great. And you, Mary?
Yeah, I love walking, you know, especially in nature. That really helps me relax.
Cool. What's one thing you like to do for fun?
I would say spend time with family or exercise or both with them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, just be with friends and family when you can safely. Yeah.
Great. What's one thing that makes you enthusiastic?
Meeting new people.
Yeah, creativity, I think, you know, building something or, you know, making something or planning something. I like to be creative.
What's one thing you've been creating lately?
I like to paint or draw, like that kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. And what's one habit you always do?
Exercise.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. And what's one habit you're working on or would like to have?
Yeah, it's calling my, you know, distant family members. Like I try to put them on a schedule, like the 7 habits, like put them on a schedule. So I call them periodically, like my older aunts and uncles and that kind of thing, just to check in. Mm-hmm. So yeah, connecting, I think, with family members.
I would say staying organized with my ideas, like a habit of just like having in my work stuff, I have like notebooks everywhere and things everywhere. So just that habit of a little more structure with some of those things.
I see. If you're not doing what you are doing today, what would you be doing?
Traveling. I really enjoy traveling when we can, when it's safe. And seeing, you know, friends and families in new areas. I love that. Yeah.
I'd probably be teaching. I'm not sure who or what, but I still feel like I already am teaching, but I'm in my own way. And so I'm sure I'd be teaching in some capacity, probably in like a school.
And how would you describe your ideal life? And you can expand on this beyond just a sentence.
I feel like I'm living it. I really do. I feel like I'm doing the work that I love. I feel like I have a solid purpose. I'm helping people. I have really supportive family and friends nearby, although we haven't obviously been able to see them as much. I really truly have spent a lot of time and attention to put into trying to build it the way that it is ideal. I would say for that like next version or next level, I would be traveling more for sure. Getting back to like speaking and presenting, Mary and I traveling together and just meeting people and collaborating in those ways is a part of like my next level ideal. But yes, I do love that question. And I love that. I think in the past I might've been like, oh, I don't know. I wouldn't have maybe owned the fact that I really do feel like I'm living that ideal. But yeah, I feel like I can say that. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think the same. I think COVID has helped me realize I need very little. I'm so grateful for a warm house and, you know, family. And so I realized, you know, I can live with a lot less during COVID. It's just what's important to me is just being safe and unhealthy and happy. I guess in my world, you know, my kids are growing up, so they're living other places. So that's where our like ideal self, I would like to have more flexibility to be with my kids more often. So that's just a new kind of life stage we're in. So we're just trying to figure that out. Yeah.
school. And how do you define purpose?
Yeah, I think it's value, like, you know, going towards your value. How I see myself living my values and my skills in this time of life, in this age of this interesting time in our world. So I just think with my unique, you know, whatever my skills are, whoever I am, what can I bring to our community? That's and that I think changes probably time to time.
Yeah, I think it's like magnifying your gifts, things that fill you up and things that are natural to you, and just aligning your work with those. So you're not constantly competing against yourself, but you're able to really be more of who you are and share those natural gifts, just like Mary said, because then you feel like you're really doing something that feels good and it's unique to you. That definitely feels like purpose to me.
Great. And are there any last requests you would like our listeners to do?
We love to connect with people. So I'd say connect with us on LinkedIn. You know, visit us on our website if that speaks to you, but definitely reach out and connect on LinkedIn. We're always up for a chat or just to, you know, just to connect, really. So I would encourage that.
Yeah, and I'll include the links on the show notes.
Right, sounds good. Yeah, just be intentional about their brain resiliency. We can help them walk through it.
Well, thank you so much, Mary, Renzel, and Allie for joining a Work in Purpose podcast. It's lovely talking to you. I learned so much.
Good. Yeah, thanks for your time. Nice. Great job.
Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode with Dr. Mary Renzel and Allie Hively and learn a lot about how you can apply neuroscience and their CLE framework to optimize your brain so you can function as your highest self and reach your purpose. If you'd like to support this podcast, please subscribe, tell your friends about it, and rate it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Please also follow A Work in Purpose on Instagram and join our group on Facebook. May your present moment, now and forever, be filled with light, love, and joy. Until next time, this is Wing, and you are listening to A Work in Purpose.